excerpts from the Gospels. We'll be starting in chapter 3 of the book of Mark. Another time, he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked him, "What is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. In the book of Luke, while Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing. Be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, "Do not tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer your sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him home, for they were all expecting him. Just then, a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him, and now she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe. She will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They laughed, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat.
Amen. Thank you, Jason. Have you ever wished you were invisible? You know, when I was a kid, that was one of the superpowers I would want to have. You know, there are all kinds of advantages to being invisible. No worries about a bad hair day. Those coffee stains that I can't seem to get away from, not a problem anymore. I'm invisible. And the idea of being invisible when mom said, "Kevin, take out the garbage," and she'd look around, "Where'd that boy go? Where is he?" all kinds of advantages to being invisible. But there were disadvantages too, wasn't there? I mean, you'd miss the smiles of recognition when you walk into a room and see somebody that you love. You wouldn't be included in activities because they didn't know you were there with them. Being alone in a crowded room, there are downsides. Well, there's eight scriptures about three people who were largely invisible to the world around them, invisible to others, and the pain they felt because of it, feeling lost and alone, and longing to come home. Some of us know that feeling at times in our lives as well. There was a family who'd gone to the movies together, mom and dad and two small children, little sister and brother who was about seven now, I suppose, and old enough that they trusted him at the concession stand before the movie started. They got their tickets, went inside, and had them torn in half. They still do that? They used to do that anyway, tear them in half so you couldn't sort of sneak into the second movie. And they were going to go inside to the main theater, but he said he wanted to get his necessary rations, you know. You got to have popcorn and milk duds. It's not the movies if you don't get milk duds. And so as they went in, they found their place to sit, and he was out waiting for his order to be filled. Finally, it was done, and he went into the theater as well. By this time, the house lights had come down, and the screen was just bright and flashing with different things, the pre-movie stuff, you know. Let's go out to the lobby, let's go out to the lobby, let's go out to the lobby and get something to eat. It's been that long since I've been to the theater, the movies. And he came into the room, of course, this bright flashing light and the room dark as could be, and he looked to find his parents. Didn't know where they'd sat. He looked at the people on his left and the people on his right, and their faces were all washed out in strange colors from the screen, and they looked like aliens to him. And he walked down, still looking on both sides, left and right, to find a familiar face of his family. Couldn't find them, and got over to the front and started back. And most of the way back, he began to panic, and he finally went toward the front again, turned around to the crowd and says, "Does anybody recognize me?" Dad stands up and waves his arms and says, "We're over here." And the boy runs to the safety of his family. Well, there is in the experience of these three people, I think, something the little boy at the movies felt. They were invisible, and I'm sure the little boy didn't want to show himself to the whole world, but he had to find somebody who knew him, who accepted him, who would welcome him in. So even though these three have made a pattern in their lives of trying to resist being exposed, they needed to be seen. The man with the atrophied hand, the leper, and the woman all worked to be invisible. The community had labeled them, excuse me, broken and unclean and shunned them in one way or another. I mean, the man with the atrophied hand was in the crowd, but was in the crowd in the way that he wouldn't have been showing his deformation. But when Jesus called him out, he had to risk that exposure. He was ashamed because he couldn't work as other men worked. He couldn't earn his own keep. He was somehow less than all the rest and was sometimes demeaned by the others in town. The leper felt the same thing. He was very contagious. Leprosy was, well, we know now it was a whole class of conditions, but leprosy was so contagious, and they had nothing that would touch it to heal it. And so lepers were then cast out of the community, out of town. They had to live in the garbage heap along with others in the same struggle. He knew the pain of the ravaging illness and the loneliness and loss of identity, little hope of healing and re-entering the community. The woman, years, was not only physically ill, but she knew the pain of being ceremonially unclean. She could not gather with other people in the community. She could not share a bed with her husband. She was deprived of all those things, and finally, of hope itself. And I wonder, do we experience some of those same feelings that they were feeling today? You know, the problem with dealing with our pain and hiding our pain is anonymity. It is both a blessing in some ways, a protective thing, but also an obstacle to us. Sometimes we choose to be anonymous. There's a safety in being unknown. And we can find a relief there. It lessens our anxiety with dealing with strangers, overhearing statements of those who aren't aware of what they're saying. Little girls saying, "Mommy, why does that man look the way he does?" Sometimes anonymity isn't preferred, but it's forced upon us by our culture of insensitivity. It can be oppressive, but we need someone to know us in order to be able to come home, to be whole. There are many who want to come to Christ, even the church, but don't want to be known. They want to touch him on their own terms, but don't want to allow him to touch them in a way that would expose them. Like the woman in this story. The woman who said, "If I can just touch his robe without anybody knowing, I'll be healed." But healing doesn't work that way. It comes in relationship. It comes in being known, and with being known comes the risks that we don't want to face. There's risk of exposure. Being exposed is imperfect. You know, I can do pretty well hiding the things in my life that aren't quite what they should be, that I know at least that much in my mind, and I'm sure others would think even more so. A risk of exposure is being imperfect and less than others. The risk of becoming a target of others, either lifted up for ridicule or for others who are well-intentioned but misguided, who will turn me or whoever me happens to be into a pity project. It's a fine line for somebody who needs our love and compassion, not to be fixers, but those who walk with them. There's a risk in being known, a risk of disappointment and hopelessness. If I show myself, what if they can't heal me? Or what if I get rejected one more time? If I don't risk, I can always think that maybe there's a chance out there somewhere that things will get better. But all three of these people finally had to take the risk. It hurt too much to stay hidden. There's a courage for the man with the atrophied hand to step out of the crowd, to pull his hand out of his robe, and to stretch it out when Jesus told him, "Stretch out your hand." But he had to expose his hand so it could be healed. Imagine the moment when he was doing that, expecting the whole world to see what he had been trying to hide all this time. And as he opened up and reached his arm out, it was perfect. I almost get chills thinking about what that would be like. The leper needed Jesus to acknowledge and embrace him. The leper who had learned to live day by day with the requirement that if he stay a certain distance away from you for your protection, that he was diseased. And if you got too close, he would put his hand over his mouth and he would cry out, "Unclean, unclean, don't come near." Who needed somebody to be willing to erase the line of separation and acknowledge him and even embrace him. And the woman's deepest need, not just her physical need, but her deepest need wasn't met until Jesus knew who had touched him. And he spoke to her and ended her isolation. You know, the gospel is all about relationship. We've said that over and over and over again. In fact, relationship has been the word of the year for me several years ago. And everything we did, we couched in terms of relationship. It's all about being known. And in the knowing, finding healing and coming home. Now, Jesus brought healing on two levels for these three people, the man who had leprosy, the woman with a chronic condition. There was physical healing for all three. The man obeyed Jesus and exposed his limb, and he was healed. And in doing that, there was spiritual healing, because Jesus restored his self-image, his standing in the community. He was now equal to the others. He could earn his own living. He was not one to be shunned, especially in a time when people believed that if you had a chronic condition or some kind of disability, it was because you or your parents had sinned and God was punishing. So as Jesus then heals this man, he no longer does he have to hide his shame. He heals his spirit in the process. But a leper, he touches his skin and he is whole, complete. But more than that, he told the man to go to the priest and make the sacrifices so the priest would declare him clean, to let him come back into town and rejoin his family and his community. I can't begin to know how it would feel to be living outside of town, knowing, watching my wife and my kids, knowing I could not be there because I was judged unclean. And seeing the evidences there in my own body, accepting that judgment. In healing his body, Jesus healed his life. And going through the priests for evidence and proof, he was allowed to come back in to his family again. And then for the woman with the hemorrhage, there was the physical healing when she touched Jesus' robe. But he healed more as she finally revealed herself to him. He accepted her and her action, and he affirmed her and called her daughter. He offered and established relationship with her. He proclaimed her clean, and she re-entered the community and her family once again. Is there a message in these three stories for us today? I mean, many of the crippling and isolating conditions we've seen in the world before can be corrected now with surgeries and therapies and prosthetic devices. Leprosy is all but gone in the world. No longer do we see things as bleeding disorders, as making us ceremonially unclean. But the issues those people faced are still real today, and there are new leprosies today, if you will, both spiritual and physical. I would suggest to you that poverty is a new leprosy among us. Many of us try to hide our own poverty, whether it's financial or whether it's relational or whether it's spiritual. We try to hide our own poverty. We shy away from those whom we think are poor. We want to think that the status isn't as much a divider now as it used to be, but there are always the signs of the haves and the have-nots. We just change from one vocabulary to another. For some of us, knowing that we were the in crowd in school, we had our senior chords. Some remember the term, senior chords? For others of us, those who could afford it, there were bell bottoms. And then there were platform shoes and earth shoes. Anybody have a pair of earth shoes when you were young? Well, there's two of us. Nobody else succumbed to that craze. And then there were labels. They were Converse, and then they were Nike and Adidas, and then there were nameplates on cars, BMWs, Cadillacs. And the vocabulary changes, but the labels that make me the have and you the have not, that separate me from those who haven't arrived, continue to keep others hiding their inadequacies. Sometimes the poverty we feel is because we've made wrong choices, or we've been accused of by the public of wrong choices. I served a church some years ago, too many now to tell you because I can't do the math. Shortly after I arrived there, one of the men in the church, his family was long-standing in the church. He was a man who worked full-time at a factory, but he was a hobby farmer. He had some property down in the river bottoms, and he also had terrible allergies, so he couldn't really be a farmer well. He would go down in the spring to the river bottoms, and he would plant that property in corn or beans or whatever it was that he was rotating that year. And then he wouldn't come back to that property until October. Weedy or not, he'd come back in October, then he would harvest it. Well, they had just passed a federal law now, at that point in time, where ownership of property where they found a marijuana grow, they couldn't find the grower, but the owner was held responsible. And they made a case with him to show how important or how dangerous it was to defy that law. 2.5 years, he went through a veritable hell. Finally, he was exonerated, but it broke his physical body. And he was never recovered his reputation fully. And so there was that publicly named accusation that caused isolation. There are many around us today who need to be healed, dare I say, even within the church. Healing of all kinds. There are spouses who are taken for granted, who need to know the healing power of a spouse who really sees them and loves them. There are widows or widowers that need to be reminded of who they are personally and not just somebody's past. In my first appointment out of seminary, I was in a little town and I was going around to meet all the people of the church because that's what I was told to do. I didn't know what I was doing. I went to a very, very modest apartment where a senior lady named Noni lived. She was housebound almost entirely. And as I visited with her and talked with her, I sat beside her partly because she couldn't hear well. And at one point as she was telling me her story, I reached over, touched her arm, and I called her by name. She broke down and wept. And my first thought was, oh my God, I've broken her. You know, what am I doing? And I asked her what was wrong. And she said, I haven't been called Noni for 30 years. And I realized how important it is that while I'm proud to be Joyce's husband, and I hope she's proud to be my wife, that there will always be somebody who knows me as Kevin and knows her as Joyce, and not just by the relationships that we have had. There are those others who hide as well. Single mothers who wrestle sometimes not only with the compassionless people who are quick to judge without knowing circumstance, but also with their own self-doubts, wondering if they can ever really be enough for their children. The homeless, we work hard to make invisible in our culture. Then there are those who don't have relationships, those who are orphaned by circumstance, who need and feel the hunger for being known and loved. In the heart of the old neighborhoods in New York City, there has stood for decades an old brick building that was an orphanage. And there are children there from infant up to, well, until the social system moved them into other homes, were living there together. A big old place, all covered by cement around them, and then there was this brick wall about 6 feet high that separated them from the noise of the city. And there was a little girl there named Sarah. She'd been there since she was an infant. And she knew how it worked. Now that she was 7 years old, she had been through the times throughout the year that they'd all get scrubbed clean and put in their best clothes and stand in a line for these nice-looking people who came through shopping for a little girl or a little boy. And for whatever reason, Sarah was never picked. Now at age 7, she was almost unadoptable, folks thought. But she was so hungry to find home. She wrote a note and put it in an envelope, and she stuffed it inside her coat so nobody could see. And one day when they went out onto the playground to play, she watched all the activity. And as she was playing, she began to inch closer to the wall. And she was making sure the attendants were busily occupied with other kids. And she came close to a tree that was growing just inside this brick wall. She climbed the tree, looking around to make sure she wasn't detected, and as she got high enough, she reached out over the branches that were overhanging the sidewalk, and she pulled this envelope out from her clothes, and she stretched out as far as she could, and she placed it into the branch, and then she looked around, and she shinnied down the tree, and she ran to play. Unbeknownst to her, the executive director of the orphanage was in her office working, and she'd seen some movement and looked and saw this little girl, Sarah, climbing the tree and putting something out there. Couldn't tell what. So she came out of her office, walked out the front doors, walked down the wide sidewalk and out beyond the gate and turned right to down the on the other side of the wall to find this tree. And she saw hanging stuck in the branches, she pulled out the small envelope and opened it. It said, "To whoever finds this, I love you." Signed, Sarah. And many of us here, most of us here, don't know the pain of being literally orphaned as children. But all of us have had the experience of being without home. Someone who is our grounding, our rooting with that. We need to be recognized and accepted like Sarah needed that, but so many of us look in the wrong places. But the good news is that Jesus came to know us and to touch us with his life and his love and to heal us and to give us a home with him. On that cross where Jesus died, God hung a message that says, "Whoever reads this, I love you." This morning we have come here for many reasons. Some of us come because that's just what we do. It's Sunday morning, we get up and we come to church. Others of us come because we're married to somebody, that's what they do, and they pick us, they get us to put your shoes on, you're coming to church. Some of us come for the coffee and donuts and to see the friends we've not seen all week. Some of us come because we're broken and alone and invisible, and we need someone to see and accept and embrace us. We all look normal, well, whatever normal is, whole, like we have it all together. But maybe somewhere where people can't see, we have a broken place. Maybe this morning what that feels like. And maybe you feel anonymous and you like it that way. It feels safe. But it gets lonely. You like the safety, but desperately want to come home. I think that's part of the attraction of some of the really big box churches, the mega churches, is that I can go and I can leave and nobody has to know who I am. Maybe as you're here this morning, you need healing, physical, facing surgery or long-term illness, or maybe you need spiritual, emotional healing from loneliness, shame, and the isolation that it brings. I want to do something a little different this morning as I wrap this all up together. And it won't work perfectly because we aren't all sitting with someone else. But if you're comfortable doing so, I want to invite you to reach out to somebody near you and join hands. And if you know somebody who's sitting alone, but you want to make that something you can do with them, go and join them in the room. But I want you, if you're comfortable doing so, to just touch another person near you. Now, don't force it. Some of us may be uncomfortable with that. And if somebody doesn't want to touch your hand, don't take it personally. It's who they are. Not who you are. Now, as you touch that person, if you haven't yet and you want to do that, then take hold of a hand. Note that touch in your mind. And close your eyes. It's safe. Nobody's going to do anything to you. Close your eyes. And your neighbor's got her eyes closed or his eyes closed too. Close your eyes and open your hearts and show yourself to Christ. No one else is going to know. But show him your crippled place. Name it, whether it's physical or emotional or spiritual. Show him your sense of hopelessness that anything will likely ever be any different. Show him your shame. And say to Jesus, here I am. Do you see me? Will you heal me? Will you embrace me? Like the boy at the theater, frantic to find his family, does anybody recognize me? Jesus, do you recognize me? And with your eyes still closed and aware of the touch of the person next to you, listen for Jesus to respond. He's calling you by name, and he says, I know you. I knew you in your mother's womb, for I created you. I died for you. Stretch out your hand, your broken place. I want to make you clean. Let me embrace you. Be of good cheer, my son or my daughter, for your faith has healed you. Come on home with me. Let's pray. Father, in this moment, there are some here who know very well the pain of loneliness, the catch-22 of anonymity. Who want to come home to feel your embrace. I pray right now your healing touch upon their bodies, their lives, their relationships, their spirits. And that as we look desperately to find you, we have eyes to see you standing up and waving your arms and saying, I'm right here. Come to me. Give us the courage to find our way home. In Jesus' name.